Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the first episode of The Zero's Journey, a serious attempt to create a canon-worthy work of original fiction from scratch. I'm James Quesada.
And I'm Mike Magyar.
Okay, and so we did an introductory episode on just the concept of the podcast. Mm-hmm. So if you haven't listened to that, give it a listen if you just want to know what we're diving into. But otherwise, we're about to crack into my half of things here.
Mm-hmm. And I feel like I'm at the top of a roller coaster hill and about to go over.
Yeah, I honestly can't wait. So I've got a detailed history of the world of George R.R. Martin's A Song of Ice and Fire, otherwise known as HBO's Game of Thrones. To be clear, this is all stuff that is in the fictional world of Song of Ice and Fire mm-hmm. prior to where the main book series begins. It's also prior to where the show begins. So I guess one little side note, if you're concerned about spoilers, just know that it is all backstory. We got the eighth and final season coming up in just a little bit here on HBO. We're not going to really spend much time talking about what might be coming up. We're going to try to avoid it because it's not really the main focus of our podcast. Some of this stuff is revealed through the character's perspective throughout the show or throughout the book. So, if you're kind of somebody who's halfway through and trying to catch up, just know that there's at least some mild spoilers and some like on the nose spoilers for the bigger events in the series. Is that funny to you?
It is funny to me because it was like mild and on the nose.
There's some mild ones.
Yeah.
As we get, what I've got is the timeline of things mapped out from the very earliest legends and, mm-hmm. and stuff, and then to the events that are directly before the series. Those ones directly before the series are full of stuff that mm-hmm. you didn't know within the first four or five seasons of the show.
Yeah. And now I feel like I'm in a roller coaster that hangs you right before you go over and mm-hmm. just refuses to let you go.
Yeah, it's like the power tower.
I hate that
ride.
Cedar
Point.
Yeah, Cedar Point. That's a Midwest classic.
Mm-hmm.
I hate it. I've only been on it one time and I made $10 from a carny. Different story.
great. We'll put a pin in that. Okay. Mike, are you ready?
Oh, strap to get into it, baby.
Great. So before we get started with like dates and places and people and events and all that, in the world of George R.R. Martin's Song of Ice and Fire, we should probably just get a lay of the land because there's a world map that exists, and this is known as the known world, okay? Where all of our stuff takes place.
Okay.
And there's like three continents on this map. Two of them are the main continents where everything goes down.
Uh-huh.
So there's Westeros.
Yeah.
This is the western continent, and it stretches north to south. So it's kind of like, go ahead.
All continents stretch north to south?
I just mean that it's tall.
If
you were looking at it.
Oh, okay.
If you were looking at it on a map, yeah, yeah.
Got it. Okay.
It's taller than it is. It's taller north to south than it is wide east to west.
Got it. Okay.
It's kind of like the UK, or on a smaller scale, it might be like Manhattan.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
The north end of it stretches off the charts.
To the unknown world north.
Yes.
Okay. Got it.
There is no map for the unknown world.
Wow.
Okay. So, and then to the west, off the west shore of Westeros, there's the Sunset Sea, which is off the charts to the west. So that's like the Pacific Ocean of the UK.
Yeah.
Well, we don't know what's out there.
We just know that Japan and China existed.
Which in this world they don't.
Got it.
Or they might. I don't know. Yeah, there some adventurer might go out there and find Japan. Okay. There's Westeros, which is in the west, and there's Essos, which is in
the
The
East.
East.
Yeah.
Great. Okay. We're doing great so far. Cool. Stretches longer east to west than it does north to south. And it's kind of perpendicular to Westeros. So there's like a big L situation going on where Westeros is the up and down of the L, and the, you know, Essos stretches out.
Is the kind of, the main
point is that they kind of meet at the south end of Westeros. The, you know, okay. And Essos is also much, much bigger than Westeros. This would be like Essos would be like the rest of Europe to the UK of Westeros, or if Westeros was like Manhattan, then it would be like the combined Queens, Brooklyn, Long Island. Maybe not that disproportionate, but that's kind of like how it is. It's like much bigger.
Okay, I want you to know that I'm probably just going to be able to picture Essos as France from now on.
Okay,
it's
good.
Just all going to be France.
yeah, truly. No, it's like right across the dividing water there, and then that's how it is in the UK, right? It's like UK,
yeah,
right
across the channel.
The closest European country is France.
France,
right? Yeah, across the English Channel. Yeah.
Yep.
Great. So about in Essos, back to the Game of Thrones world. In Essos, about 2/3 of the way into the east of Essos, there's a dividing mountain range that cuts off, it cuts straight north south across Essos.
Got it. So that's it's parallel to Westeros.
Yes, correct.
Uh-huh.
To the east of the mountain range, is kind of a no man's land. There's some ancient civilizations and landmarks. And of course, you get off the charts east. There's still land that goes out there.
Yeah.
We just don't know what it is. So you got like a sort of ocean situation on the west of Westeros that goes off the charts, but you still got landmass on the east off the charts of Essos.
Yeah. It's just, in my head, it's just a bunch of people that are like, I don't want to get involved.
yeah. Private people.
Yeah.
Okay. So the other continent that we see on the map of the known world is Sothorios. It's a southern continent. We see the pattern.
That is new to me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, it was new to me looking at this map as well. It's just a little bit of land poking up into the known territories. The continent itself of Sothorios stretches into unknown reaches. It's very dark. It's wild. It's mysterious. It's kind of like the Amazon of the known world. And it is, of course, off the charts south.
Okay. So they spent a lot of time mapping an area, a lot of areas. And then they were like, well, that's enough. Because there's unknown areas all around, right?
Yeah. It's kind of interesting too, because just to recap, there's Westeros, mm-hmm. which has the continuing off the charts northern area, and then there's Essos off the charts east. There's still land that keeps going,
yeah.
but off the charts, and Sothorios to the south.
Got it.
The only direction where it's just a body of water is to the west.
The Pacific Ocean.
Pacific Ocean of Game of Thrones.
Game of Thrones.
Japan. So, yeah, there's a lot of map territory that we don't see. I don't know.
I mean, future franchises.
Yeah. The to-be-continued continental
mm-hmm.
surroundings. Okay, so just a couple other notable landmarks. There is the Narrow Sea, which is the dividing waterway between Westeros and Essos. Westeros and Essos don't truly connect. The closest they come to it is kind of like this little like Panama Canal looking thing
uh-huh.
at the south end of Westeros.
So it really is like Europe and the UK.
Yeah. Well, I think it borrows from a lot of real life geographic, areas and this one in particular, like this connecting little land bridge between Westeros and Essos, to me is a lot like the Panama connection between Panama mm-hmm. and South America. The land bridge that does connect them is the closest thing to a real land connection between the two. But it's really more of a scattered set of islands known as the Stepstones. The rest of the border between Westeros and Essos is divided entirely by the body of water known as the Narrow Sea, running south to north. Okay, then there's also the far north, the off-the-charts north, and this is known as the Lands of Always Winter, which is still part of Westeros, but to the northmost parts. And, you know, highly uncharted. It's also dark, mysterious territory. It would be like, honestly...
The Arctic Circle.
Yeah. It would be like if Greenland was at the north end of UK and just, like, stretched into...
Oblivion.
Infinity. Yeah. Okay, last notable landmark would be off to those uncharted areas of the east. You have the Shadowlands.
Ooh.
It's an area... So on the east side of the known world on the map is an area that kind of like juts down to the south of Essos. It's kind of like India, like Texas.
India or Texas. I mean, really, what you've described is sort of like a phallus hanging off of both the countries.
Yeah, it's a little shameful
penis
of Essos off to the east. Okay, at the tip of this area, is the city of Ashai, which
that's really unfortunate.
Ashai, or that there are.
Both for being at the tip of the penis.
Yeah. Stretching to the northeast of Ashai is a dark and looming mountain region known as the Shadowlands. Ashai is an ancient city said to have been standing since the world began and that it will stand until the world ends. Its buildings are also made of a greasy black stone.
Wow.
Well, I was right.
Wow.
Okay, so
just
that's...
I'm picturing like slimy... Just like ectoplasm.
That's also what I picture. I picture just like
goop.
Yeah, like loogie covered.
Yes. Yeah.
Black stone.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's the lay of the land. So we got the map. The first age of history here is known as the Dawn Age, and this is the stuff of legends, right? So it's pre-recorded history, so everything is just myths and legends and passed down stories of different cultures throughout the known world. So we mentioned in our introductory breakdown of the podcast here that we covered J.R.R. Tolkien. And unlike his history, which kind of gives like a definite known history...
Yeah, like his version of the Big Bang.
Yeah, there's a true thing that is determined by his history. George Martin's world is meant to be ambiguous, and the history of it is meant to be uncertain. So by design, like in real life, we don't know what's true about things this far back in history. And you know, even as we get to eras with recorded history, everything is suspect. Okay, that's like a hallmark of George Martin's.
Yeah.
Epic fiction is
a lot.
Like,
people were drinking a lot. Memories get foggy. The stories get diluted. Yeah.
There's the 60s. Yeah. And people just kind of lose track of what was going on and the details. Okay. So it's the Dawn Age. And we're going to start with Sothorios, that South continent.
Mm-hmm.
Not really much to talk about in Sothorios during the Dawn Age, which is why I want to start there. But the northernmost islands of Sothorios are known as the Basilisk Isles, and there are ancient ruins which are said to originate from the Dawn Age and civilizations that at some point just vanished. One notable landmark in the Basilisk Isles is on the Isle of Toads. There's a 40-foot toad statue made of a greasy black stone. Another northern city on Sothorios, on the mainland, is Yin, a city built of similar, if not the very same, greasy black stone. Stones so large, it's said they would take elephants to be moved. Abandoned for thousands of years in the middle of dense jungle growth, yet no growth touches the city of Yin. almost.
Is it because of the grease?
Yeah, almost as if the plants are avoiding it. Like water to, wait, no, I'm thinking of oil.
Yeah, I was thinking of oil. Yeah. Wow, that, I just had like a really strong urge to go exploring there.
Yeah, it sounds very cool. And again, I'm very sad that Sothorios isn't really covered much in the series.
Yeah.
But that's really all we have that's going to be relevant for the moment. Oh, except for this. There is a legendary race of beings known as the Deep Ones. Ooh. They are half-human, half-fish people who may or may not have existed around the Iron Islands off the west coast of Westeros. And the descendants of these half-fish, half-human people may or may not have ended up on the Isle of Toads in the Basilisk Isles of Sothorius, not too far from that city of Yeen.
Wow.
With me?
I'm super, super with you. Mm. This like is awakening the inner child in me. Because like as a kid, I always had a fantasy of discovering some kind of vine-covered temple. Indiana Jones.
It is very, yeah. Sothorius is very Indiana Jones.
Yeah.
I feel like, or, you know, Tomb Raider.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's artifacts and just things you pick up and things happen and greasy walls. I'm in. I'm 100% in.
Greasy walls.
It's too bad we're leaving.
Yeah. So that's it. We're moving on. Okay. Legend has it dragons flew the skies throughout the known world during the Dawn Age. Although, if they did, they've generally been omitted from stories and specific events during the time. It was really, we're not going to talk about dragons again for a while.
That's so weird to me. Because if you think that there was someone around to notice dragons, you'd think that they would make an appearance in a story or two.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, yeah. The only mention I could find of them in the wiki is just that they supposedly existed at that time. That they flew the skies freely or whatnot.
Can you imagine how much shit must be going on in your life where the dragons are like the forgettable part
of
your day?
Yeah. Well, we're going to see. Okay. So in Westeros, we have the Children of the Forest. Yes. These are small people skilled in magic who use dragon glass for tools. They are skin changers and green seers. They know how to warg. You know, warging?
What?
You familiar with warging?
No. Is that like LARPing?
Oh, kind of.
Really?
Yeah. Well, live action role play.
Yeah.
So warging is like possessing animal creatures or other beings.
Oh, okay.
So it is kind of like role playing.
That's what Bran does.
Yes, that's true.
Okay.
So these Children of the Forest, skin changers, green seers are kind of like people who can like see into the future or possess other or like skin changers. I think this is how it works. I'm fact check me on this later. But skin changers, I think, can like see through the eyes of animals. Green seers can like see maybe events outside the present, and wargs can like take control of animals and other beings. It could be missing the mark on that.
Very exciting.
The main thing to know is that Children of the Forest have a strong mystical relationship with the surrounding other life of the world.
Yeah, and they basically invented like the best video game ever.
Yes. Well, they're living it. They don't need the video game. They are a video game. Okay, the other thing about the Children of the Forest is that they worshipped the old gods. And the old gods of the forest are an endless number of spirits in all things. There's special trees called were-trees, which represent the old gods to the Children of the Forest. These trees are big, they're white, they're spooky. They're mystical-looking trees with red leaves like blood-stained hands.
Oh, wait a minute. That's the one tree in Winterfell.
Well, yeah. There's a special spiritual tree in Winterfell that is like this big white, almost like willow/maple tree, big white trunk, red okay. leaves.
Like a birch.
But they're all over the place. And they were more all over the place in the Dawn Age.
Uh-huh.
And the children of the forest would carve faces into the weretrees, and a weretree with a face carved in it was called a heart tree. So there's a heart tree in Winterfell.
Okay.
The faces of heart trees would leak a red syrupy substance.
Maple syrup.
But red, it sure as hell looked like the faces were crying blood. That's really
wow. Maple syrup, but like very creepy.
Exactly. And I mean, that much more so with the faces carved into it. Okay, then we have giants. Giants are big. And supposedly they also roamed all over Westeros, but there's not really much mention of them either in key events. So like dragons, I guess kudos on them for finding a way to like hide while shit was going down.
Wow, it's really impressive that the biggest creatures around were also the stealthiest.
Right? Yeah. I mean, yeah, the giants we'll hear from again in this episode. But then there's long stretches where I think in the rest of the episodes after this one, we're not going to hear from them again.
I feel like the people or whatever that ran into either a dragon or a giant, they were just so shook by the whole experience that they came back and they're like, "Oh, there's nothing there." Or it's all right. There's nothing going on.
You think people just blacked it out or blocked it out of their memory?
Yeah, 100% repressed memories.
Holy shit, what was that? Nobody talk about this. That was fucking crazy.
Nobody saw anything, right? There's nothing going on. We're just going to pretend like nothing happened.
Okay, so that's Westeros. We got the children of the forest, the old gods of the forest, and giants. In Essos, during the Dawn Age, it's mostly people, mostly like humans over there. It's a little less exciting. But we have the Fisher Queens, the oldest legendary people of the Essos continent. Not really much that we know about them. They ruled the realm of the Fisher Queens, aptly named.
Wait, who ruled?
The Fisher Queens.
Who ruled them?
The Fisher Queens ruled themselves. They were just they're like the children of the forest, but for Essos.
Yeah,
I don't even know what they are. I don't have a description for them.
Okay, there's no.
I don't have like a visual.
Yeah, but there's not. They're not like the half mermaid people from.
No, those are the deep ones.
Got it.
Fisher Queens. I really maybe related lore, but so they ruled over the realm of the Fisher Queens, which was pretty much this like central lake, this big lake in the middle of Essos, and in like the modern day world of Game of Thrones, it's like a desertous or like prairie kind of area. If it existed ever, it dried up and it left. There's like three little lakes in the modern world of the Game of Thrones series.
Climate change.
Right, yeah, they didn't regulate and ended up losing the realm of the Fisher Queens.
Oh, what a shame.
We can learn from this, people. Okay, so other early civilizations included the Hairy Men.
Okay.
There's the lost city of Liber.
Liber?
Mm-hmm, I think so. The Sumeri.
Okay.
The Zakora. Did you just gurgle?
I did, yes.
I wasn't sure if it was me or...
No, that was 100% me.
Okay, so there's the Zakora.
Mm-hmm.
The Kothi. That's with a Q and two A's.
Kothi.
Kothi.
Okay. Apostrophe? And
Nope.
Wow, okay.
And the Gips.
Boy, I thought that the Hairy Men had got the shaft on the naming there, but then we got the Gips at the end, and they seem whimsical.
It sounds like a derogatory term for
100%, yeah.
The most notable beyond all those civilizations would be the Tall Men of Cernori, who were said to have dominated the land after the Fisher Queens faded into obscurity. Some say the leader of the Tall Men was Huzur Amai, the last son of the Fisher Queens.
Wow.
So okay. It's like son of a god kind of thing. I think there's a lot of that. There's like these kind of like legendary or godlike...
mythical
beings. Mythical beings. And then
I picture
then like
Kevin Sorbo as Hercules, but that's probably not accurate.
As the
last
Amai.
Son.
Yeah, the last son of the Fisher Queens is Kevin Sorbo. Okay, so then we have Yi-Ti.
Known at home?
So it's Yeet, Y-I-T-I. It could be, it's Yeet or it's E-T.
Okay.
Truly more like the extraterrestrial. So this is a city known as the Empire of the Dawn. It's a city that claims origins as far back as the Dawn Age. And the first emperor of Yeet was known as God on Earth, the son of two deities worshipped by the people of Yeet. It is said that the god on Earth ruled for thousands of years until eventually handing over his rule to a line of emperors all named after precious stones. You want to hear about him?
Oh, 100%. Yeah.
The Pearl Emperor.
Ah, okay.
Jade Emperor.
Pearl. Jade I'm on board with. Pearl, I don't know that you could count as a precious stone.
It's a precious growth.
It's a it's a tumor.
True, yeah. Beautiful tumor. Okay, the Pearl Emperor, the Jade Emperor, Tourmaline Emperor.
Uh-huh. Not familiar with that one.
Me neither. I think, I mean, I wish I could have just changed it to turquoise.
Or turpentine.
Could be the same thing. Tourmaline. Onyx Emperor.
Yeah.
Topaz Emperor.
Yeah.
Opal.
Oh, we're getting into classics now.
Emperor. Amethyst Emperor.
Yeah.
Amethyst was usurped by her brother.
Diamond.
The Bloodstone Emperor.
Ah,
I'm sorry.
Got it. Yeah. Damn.
You.
I lose.
Lose the million dollars.
Damn it.
Bloodstone Emperor. Okay. Another ancient civilization which claims its beginning stretched back to the Dawn Age is the Giscari Empire, the city of geese.
Also known as Canada.
The city of geese was founded by Grazdan the Great, and their symbol was the harpy, a legendary creature with torso of a woman, the legs of an eagle, the wings of a bat, and the tall... And the tail of a venomous scorpion.
Oh, wow. That's... Holy shit, that's a lot.
Let me give that to you one more time.
Yeah,
please. Torso of a woman.
Uh-huh.
Legs of an eagle.
Okay.
Wings of a bat.
Wow.
Tail of a venomous scorpion.
Deadly.
The Giscari people may not have existed as far back as the Dawn, but maybe this harpy did?
Yeah. Sounds like something that came out at the dawn of something where they're not really sure what path anything is going to take. So they just put a bunch of stuff in the one entity.
True. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So then we get to our first rough time mark on things. Everything we've covered so far is kind of in the questionable who knows when.
Yeah.
Pre-recording.
So
history.
Is it fair? Okay. I don't want to digress you too far, but I feel like this is if we're getting into like recorded time, is it fair to say that this was like fairy tales? Like children's?
Yeah, that's basically what it is.
Okay. All right.
Yeah.
Child, let me tell you the story of the scorpion-tailed woman.
Totally.
Eagle.
Yes. However, unlike reality, it's like in the current timeline of things in the series and books, it's like we know dragons exist. We know giants exist.
Yeah.
There's some of this stuff like this harpy we haven't seen any evidence of. And in fact, I'm nobody suggested that it ever did. I just did because I was looking for ancient mythological creatures in this era.
Okay. And I don't want to get bogged down too much into the series or everything, just for my own frame of reference. The big oaf that was hanging around with the oaf.
Okay.
With the wildlings, that was a giant, right? That is that was...
The one that looked like a giant? The one that looked like five times the size of a human?
Yeah, giant man was a giant?
Yes.
Got it.
It was a giant. So, that's the cool thing. This is probably the most fun that I had researching all this because there's the most, I think, speculation about the details because it's pre... the idea of recorded history in this.
Yeah.
And by design, like we kind of said at the top, is that like it's meant to be open to interpretation and multiple possibilities. And it's cool that like, okay, I mean, we're pretty close to the end of the series and we haven't seen a handful of this stuff. But like the fact that some of this did at the beginning of the series get called... you know, the stuff of fairy tales and then came back into reality.
Yeah.
it's like, oh, well, there's anything is possible, right?
Yeah. And there's something kind of like, it makes me kind of like a little bit sad internally to think about that one giant where like at some point he had like a bunch of ancestors hanging around. And then he was just kind of like by himself. It's sad.
You still talking about the one guy? That's
yeah, dude, the one guy. He took arrows like a champ.
I think there's multiple giants. I think that he's just kind of like that one giant was just kind of like the
one giant that ended up being a pinboard for arrows.
Yeah, but that's for like dramatic purposes that we even were able to identify him.
Yeah. He had, yeah.
There was some more.
There was some more.
Yeah, I think
okay.
so.
Well,
I could be wrong on that too. Let's before we go, we're gonna about to get into like some specifics here. So I just want to make this clear as a disclaimer. All this research, which I spent a ridiculous amount of time researching.
Yeah. And can I just say that every time you sent me a text and you were like, I got more. I thought you were done like three texts before you were actually done.
Oh, no. It's bottomless. There's a bottomless well of stuff out there. But what I want to make clear is that I'm getting all this kind of secondhand. I read.
Well, you don't know George. You didn't talk to him.
So I'm not hearing it from the horse's mouth.
Yeah.
But also, I didn't read the book series and or the companion pieces. So I'm getting all this off of like different wikis and YouTube channels and podcasts and piecing it together from really well done compilations that super fans of the series and the books have put together. So I don't have the nitty gritty answers on some of this stuff or even most of it. Such as in the series, was there more than one giant?
No. And I don't, I don't want there to be more than one. I like that. I was attached to that one. And I liked him. And I thought I just wanted to in my mind, it makes me feel better to know that he was a part of this, lineage.
He was an orphan. Okay.
Yeah, okay.
Let's, move on. So, jumping back over to Westeros, okay, and this is roughly about 12,000 B.C.
Okay, B.C. before Christ?
Conquering.
Okay.
Or conquest. I think it's before conquest.
Which conquest? Are we getting there?
12,000 B.C.
Okay.
The first timestamp on things is when the first men migrate over from Essos into Westeros over the connecting land bridge at the southeast end of Westeros, southwest end of Essos. Okay?
Yeah. Step Islands.
They are now. So.
Oh, but it used to be.
It's speculated that at some point that land bridge was solid.
Yeah, before global warming took out the lake, the sea levels were lower and there was a bridge. Okay.
So the first men migrate over to Westeros. And they're not the first men in the world. We kind of covered some of the ancient civilizations of the Essos area. They're just, these are the first men in Westeros. And they come in to that south end of Westeros and they start chopping down trees and setting up shop, right? And this pisses off the children of the forest because those trees are sacred. But
yeah, and they spent all that time carving those faces in them.
Yeah, I mean, it's there's art behind that.
There's art
and
they're
religion.
Crying.
Right.
Blood. Syrup.
To the first men, however, these trees are creepy. Creepy as heck.
They don't understand art.
But I mean, yeah. So the first men come over and they're like, these, we got to get rid of these.
Yeah, we got to first order of the business. If we're going to set up shop here, we got to make it less creepy.
Yeah, any tree with blood tears and that weird face. Let's get rid of those.
Which I mean, to be honest, I kind of understand. I mean, maybe some people would say it's not their place to go to the new place. But if you're going to go, if going is already decided.
It sounds like these guys have plans.
You gotta make it less creepy.
Yeah.
Take out some face trees.
Yeah. They worked with a travel agent and everything.
Yeah.
They had their itinerary set out ahead of time.
And you can't back out because there's no cancellation or else you got to pay a fee.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So chopping down sacred trees. That's the game plan.
It's the middle ground.
Yeah. Okay. So there, because of this, the first men and the children of the forest go to war.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. The children are pissed about the tree situation and the first men aren't backing down. So they go to war for like 2,000 years.
Holy shit. Okay, yeah, that's a really long time. Did you cover this already? And forgive me if you did, but are the children regular sized or are they children sized?
That's a great question, because even if they were children sized, if they were children of giants, they'd be pretty big.
Yeah, well, even if they were children sized, if there's enough of them, well, I'm assuming if they were children sized, there was enough of them to keep a war going for 2,000 years. And if not, if they weren't enough of them, then they must have been larger.
They had adult work ethic.
And organization skills like you would not believe. Yeah. Plus, they knew the land, right? It was theirs.
Right, yes. That's a great question, though, because the children of the forest didn't really have a name until the first men showed up. And then the first men started calling them the children of the forest because compared to men, they were child size. So they're the size of human kids, and that's how big they get to maturation.
Got it.
Are we a fan of that word, maturation?
I'm not a fan.
Fully mature. At maturation.
So it's the tale as old as time where somebody comes in and goes, well, we're obviously the first ones of us here, so everything is new. So we're just going to label everything as we see it. Damn tradition.
Yes. This, again, we can really learn about our own world.
This is really a political podcast.
It is. I mean, truthfully, this same thing though is going to happen several times. The idea of invasion and the same stuff that
I think the lesson to learn there is that there is no lessons learned throughout history.
Yeah, we just said BC is before conquest, and we're like, well, that seems wrong that the first men are coming over and hustling these children.
Yeah.
This isn't even the conquest.
Yeah.
Okay, so according to legend, the children of the forest summon the hammer of the waters.
Holy.
Okay, this is powerful ass magic in order to destroy the land bridge between Westeros and Essos, shattering it into the Stepstone Islands that presently exist.
Wow.
Okay, they're trying to sever the pathway between Essos and Westeros after men start coming over.
Dude, holy shit, this is a metaphor though, because if it's the hammer of waters, like,
that's a metaphor.
It's a sea level rising.
Help me out.
Well, okay. So if there's a land bridge, follow me here.
Yeah.
If there's a land bridge, right? And this is all pre-recorded history, right?
Yes.
It's mythical.
Yes.
So they're basically summoning the hammer of waters to destroy a land bridge, which is a metaphor for sea level rising and a land bridge disappearing.
I see you. I think I know what you're saying, but a hammer doesn't raise water.
So you're right. No, you're
100%
right.
Regard, metaphor, it's not a good one.
No, hammer does not raise water. Stupid.
It'd be more like the flood of the waters,
It'd be like a pump. Call it a pump.
There it is. Yeah.
Yeah.
Pump
it's not
the waters. Okay. So, hammer of the waters, alt title, pump of the waters. The children of the forest are trying to cut the path that the men are taking over, right?
Mm-hmm.
But the infestation of men is too far along. They spread into the southern regions of Westeros, and they're pushing their way further north every day.
Those dicks.
Yeah. So and this is a summation of 2,000 years, but this is kind of where it ends up. We got the children who are forced farther north as the wars go on, and they attempt to sever the neck of Westeros. Okay, there's this like pinched area of land at about the halfway point of the total landmass of
UK and Scotland.
Yeah. So but I think farther south in the Westeros.
Oh yeah, I'm not going to try to map this to actual equatorial.
It is like that. It's a pinched area of land, and It's about halfway. So they're trying to, the main thing here is that they're trying to cut the continent in half. It's not like that little land bridge between Essos and Westeros where they're like, we'll just chop it here.
Yeah.
That's an easy snip.
They're trying to snap a hole. The children are basically like, listen, this is our line. It's Bugs Bunny, right? It's when he draws the line in the sand.
Yeah.
And then hopefully the men don't step over it. Or Elmer Fudd.
Yes. True. And like the Bugs Bunny where he's orchestrating. Do you remember that one where he's the maestro?
Oh, absolutely.
Conducting the orchestra. And that opera singer just has to sing until he's blue in the face and eventually sings so loud that
his things start flapping loose.
And the ceiling collapses. And,
yeah.
Yeah. So the orchestra is like the water.
Okay. I thought I had lost the metaphor, but I got it right at the end.
It was a long roundabout. So they try to sever the neck of Westeros. It only works like halfway, and they partially flood things into these marshlands. And at this point, all this showy and destructive magic was enough to prompt men and children to call truce. Okay, yeah, we're at like 10,000
But also 2,000 years, though.
Yeah.
After like 2000 they weren't years. Easily dissuaded.
True. So, yeah, and it's really, I mean, it's got to be like a pretty threatening, it's like the A bombs, right? Except like used 2,000 years apart. So we got.
So not as effective.
Right. So
instead of a 1-2 punch.
Yeah. So you got, if they happen back to back, it might have been over pretty quickly.
Yeah.
Instead, you got the first severing of the land bridge into the stepstones, and men are like, "Oh my God, that was crazy!" But is that the only one?
Yeah.
And they probably hang out for a second, and they're like, "I think that's it. I think they're out."
So it's like a cool down period.
Yeah,
for
2,000 years.
Yeah,
and then the next one, they're like, "A bomb number two. We're going to try to sever this neck," and then the men are like, "Damn, that was another one."
Man, and I honestly don't know if you're going to get into this, but like. Imagine the men getting out of Essos and then encountering magic, which presumably they haven't encountered before, right?
I think that's
presumably.
True.
And then still being like, wait, that was fucked up. We don't understand any of this, but let's see if we can keep pushing forward.
Yeah, yeah. The arrogance of men.
Oh, okay. Either that or whatever they're getting away from is really bad.
Right, which is, you know what? And as a little side note, I said the tall men of the Sarnori took over after the Fisher Queens.
Yeah.
Remember that part?
It must have been just...
Yeah, that might have actually been what edged them out.
Yeah.
They're like, we got to find someplace else to go.
Like, this is fucking
the
terrible.
The tall men are fucking jerks. This place looks nice, except for these trees. We'll cut them down.
Yeah. It's like, well, what's a little bit of blood-crying trees compared to what we just got away from?
Yeah. Okay, so there's the pact. That's the event here, right? They they call it a truce. And this is around 10,000 BC. So it's been 2,000 years. And in the truce, the men and the children of the forest decide to divide up territories. That's the agreement.
Okay.
So the children get the deep forest.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? And the men... get the fields and the shores and the hills and the mountains and all of the open lands.
That doesn't seem fair.
Why not?
Well, presumably the children of the forest have to eat, right? So my first thought goes to the men have the fields and therefore the ability to make food. And also the one forest.
If you're a farmer, I mean, the children get the forest. There's like natural growth there. That's what you're concerned about is they don't have fields to farm in?
Yeah, I'm worried about the breadbasket of the country.
Breadbasket? Bread?
Yeah.
You think these children of the forest who have been surviving with a mythical connection to the land around them are farming?
No, but they could be. I just don't want to shut that door down. So what, are they just sucking moss the whole time?
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, okay. All right.
I mean, they're like human-esque.
No, I get what you're saying. What bothers me is you named one geographical entity, the forest, for the children, and then you named like six for the men. So it's
why?
Just
how is that unfair? The children get the deep
forest. It's just the
arrogance. It's a deep forest. There's probably a lot of forest. I mean, at this point,
there's hills.
There's no metropolis, right? They haven't paved stuff to over. So the children get the deep forest, the men get the fields and the shores and the hills and the mountains and the open lands.
Again, one thing for like six things.
You are never satisfied. Okay, the men stop chopping down trees.
Well, they got happy? Enough. They got enough.
Okay, and instead, the men start worshiping the old gods and adopting the customs and the religion
of Essos.
Of the children's.
Oh, okay. I'm confused. The old gods come from Essos, right?
Westeros. The old gods are the gods of the children of the forest.
Oh.
So those are the trees.
They took 5/6 of their stuff and then they said, well, your religion seems pretty cool, so we'll take that as well.
There it is. Yes. Oh,
God bless it. All right.
That is correct.
Arrogance. Arrogance.
Yeah. Yeah. So they came in, destroyed their religious artifacts.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But then they were like, shit, that was actually pretty cool.
Yeah. Okay.
It's a metaphor here.
Yeah. So we're at 10,000 BC, right? And after the pact and this truce, this is what's known as the Age of Heroes.
Okay.
And
I'm assuming those heroes were men, but whatever.
Patriarchy. Yep. For Westeros, the pact between children and men marked the end of the Dawn Age. Okay, so we're out of that.
Okay.
And we're in the beginning of the Age of Heroes. And the Age of Heroes is pretty much just an era for Westeros, not really the rest of the known
world.
Well,
sure, because now they're getting to write their own history, right? They're not going to write about the mythical children of the forest. They gave them the forest.
Yep.
So now they're like, well, we just make our own history.
Mm-hmm. Although, to be fair, this is still pre-recorded history, so we're not quite into history yet.
So it's still stories.
It's still kind of lumped in with the Dawn Age because of that.
Okay.
Right? Yep. So it's really just kind of shifting into like, all right, there's peace between children of the forest and men, and there's kind of like these tall tale heroics and historical figures that come out of it. It's also when many of the seven kingdoms of the current Game of Thrones world start taking shape or getting the seeds of them planted.
Okay.
So many of these heroes of the age founded those kingdoms.
Okay. It's like the 13 colonies.
Yeah. If like different what am I trying to say?
I'm not sure.
Basically, if like Paul Bunyan had a crew of 13 guys that went around founding.
And then they all traveled together, got to a place and then said, well, I'll see you later. And then they all split apart. And
yes.
Yeah.
Okay. So heroes are said to have built the humble beginnings of cities like Winterfell, Storm's End, Old Town, Casterly Rock, Pike on the Iron Islands, and Highgarden. And
what is Pike?
Pike
is... I'm familiar with all the other ones. I can place them inside my head right now, but I don't know what Pike is.
So the Iron Islands.
Yeah.
Off the west coast of Westeros.
Uh-huh.
California. That's the capital island.
Uh-huh.
Pike.
Pike is the capital island.
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
Okay. So here are some of the heroes of the Age of Heroes. You got Bran the Builder.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Okay. He built Winterfell Castle in the north. Eventually the Wall, which we'll talk about later.
Okay.
You have Durin Godsgrief, who convinced the demigod to choose a mortal life of love with him. The demigod's parents, goddess of wind and the god of the sea, punished Durin with raging storms. Durin built and rebuilt his castle, which was repeatedly destroyed by the wrath of the gods until he finally built the enduring castle of Storm's End.
Holy shit. Okay.
Yeah, that's kind of
cool.
It's like
the people that keep building houses in hurricane land.
Yeah, or like the Three Little Pigs.
Oh, that's way less dark, but yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I'm sorry. That was a very judgmental thing for me to say. I like Three Little Pigs better, yeah.
Okay, so then there's Lan the Clever, tricked the Casterly family into giving up their home of Casterly Rock by buttering himself up naked, slipping through the stone walls of the castle and messing with stuff until the Casterlys were convinced the place was haunted and moved out.
Oh my God! So this guy is like a really greasy ninja.
Yeah, or like he's like a Scooby-Doo villain.
Oh man, that's ingenuity right there is what that is. And also, shame on the Casterly family for just being like, "Hi, I'm out of here."
Right.
It's just like a buttered up dude, like.
Well, they didn't know, though, but that's just how he got in.
Yeah.
Buttered himself up and...
then moved around some picture frames, started some fires.
Squeezed like a cartoon character through the stone cracks of the castle. and then started creating mischief. So they thought... but they thought it was ghosts. They thought it was like poltergeist. And in a time when there's like all these mythical...
No butter.
No butter. You got to make your own.
Yeah.
So...
well, no. What I meant by no butter is the concept of nobody could have squeezed through that because they would get stuck, and they didn't understand the concept of butter, which this man so ingeniously created.
Right.
Yeah.
Even so, do you think they would be like, maybe somebody buttered themselves up and just weaseled their way through this crack?
Maybe that's just me, man. But I've had that thought before, of greasing myself up to squeeze through holes.
All right.
I know, it just seems like it makes sense to me.
Okay.
So I guess I'm this guy in the retelling of this myth.
This is your kin. Okay, so he's laying the clever because he pulls stunts like that, yeah. Right? You got the Grey King, slayer of sea dragons and husband to a mermaid. Grey King puts the Grey in Greyjoy.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
Yeah.
Garth Greenhand, purveyor of agriculture, bountiful lands and fertility.
Oh yeah, who's the idiot now? I told you agriculture was going to come back.
Yes,
it's important,
but this not for the children of the forest. The children of the forest are of the forest. They don't need agriculture. Okay, but Garth Greenhand sowed the seeds of the plentiful in the Reach. The Reach is like a beautiful stretch of green lands, known for its, you know, greeniness.
Chlorophyll.
Yeah. Known for
its ability to perpetuate the process of photosynthesis.
Yeah. The photosynthesis agenda. And you also got the winged knight of the Vale in the mountains.
Uh-huh.
Fought with giants. Another mention of giants, yeah, there. Rode a falcon.
Wow.
That's kind of cool.
Shit. Okay.
And commanded birds. Maybe even an army of eagles.
Interesting. I like the idea of the accomplishment of it. The idea of riding a falcon is so new that it made it as an accomplishment of the Age of Heroes. Like, the guy rode a falcon.
Wait, what do you mean it's new?
Well, because I'm assuming he's the first one to do it.
If you saw somebody riding a falcon today, you'd be like, old stuff.
No, that's my point, is if I saw somebody riding a falcon today, I'd be like, holy shit, that's new. I'm going to write it down, right? So okay. The guy went out, wrangled himself a falcon, and then rode it, not to a battle, not to accomplish anything, but just the act of riding a falcon.
Yeah.
Just to do it.
Yeah. It's like seeing those people who ride those Segways. But the ones that
join us on the Central Park Falcon Tour.
the ones that don't have the handlebar, like the podium shaft.
The one,
what are those called?
Yeah. Yeah, the one wheel.
Those two wheelers. Oh shit! Yeah, like the unicycle.
Yeah,
too.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Okay, but even better. Yeah, it'd be like that.
Yeah,
be like, holy shit!
Yeah, you'd write that down.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Okay, so probably the most important event during the Age of Heroes is the Long Night.
You just looked at me like that was supposed to mean something, yeah. And I'm trying to make it mean something, but that means nothing.
A chill didn't go over you when you heard that?
No, it did, but okay. Not for any reason that linked anything to anything else.
You've heard this word before, the Long Night.
I don't think I have.
Okay, perfect. This was a winter of darkness that lasted a generation and brought about the appearance of the White Walkers.
Oh, shit. Okay.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm in.
There's the chill.
Yeah.
The Long Night seemingly affected the entire known world, with cultures all over Westeros and Essos having similar stories about what went down. Page turn.
Wow. I think you...
Oh, that's page one.
Yep.
Looking for... Here it is, page yep. three.
Also... if we're just going to play the metaphor game,
mm-hmm.
The Long Night, Ice Age.
Yeah, I think that's true. Although fewer Siberian tigers
and mammoths.
Wait, no, saber-toothed tigers. That's what I'm thinking.
Siberian,
about.
Yeah,
but Siberian still, tigers. There's probably still Siberian tigers in the Ice Age.
I honestly, I don't know.
Okay. Really.
Dropped the ball on my end of the research here.
Yeah, I mean, I know what existed during the Long Night. You don't know what existed during the Ice Age?
I'm sorry.
Okay, I guess I'll just keep going with my end of things.
Well, this is crack. This is a crack in the friendship.
This is crack. Okay, so we got the White Walkers.
Uh-huh.
AKA the Others for the book.
And those Lost fans.
Is there... You say Lost?
Lost.
Is there the Others in Lost? Yeah. I never watched Lost.
The Dharma Initiative was initially known as the Others.
Oh.
Well, there was the Others on the island. You know what? This is an entirely different podcast. But there was the Others, and then the Dharma Initiative was called the Others by the new people that crash landed on the island.
You got shit like that to pull out nowhere, but you can't tell me if Siberian tigers were around during the Ice Age?
Dude, show me a mediocre 6-season TV show about Siberian tigers. I'll tell you what you need to know.
Okay, so the White Walkers seem like they only showed up in Westeros. They came from the north in the lands of Always Winter and descended upon Westeros. Apparently, during the wars between the children and the first men, the children captured some men and used magic to create the White Walkers as a weapon against men.
Oh, fuck. So that went sideways on them.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Or did it? I don't know. Do they still want them gone or what?
Real quick, geographical clarification. The deep forest is between the unknown lands to the north and Westeros, right?
That's a good question. I thought of the deep forest as being any forest that was big enough to have a deep part of it. it's a very like.
Oh man, so you would just have like isolated pockets of like children missing, essentially lost children.
Again, these are not like they're not missing. They're not
nobody's
looking for their parents.
On Amber Alert for the yeah,
right,
I get it.
Yeah. So eventually, the children of the forest start thinning out as a people. So at this point, or in the present day, maybe they're kind of secluded to very. Rare
yeah.
areas.
Yeah, but I just assumed that it was region, the forest.
I don't think so. I think at this point it's like again any forest region that is big enough to have what you would call deep forest.
Yeah. So it's like whenever my parents and I went on a hike when we were kids and we got far enough where we're like, well, we might not know our way back.
Yeah,
that. Fear yeah. level the notes the border of the deep forest.
Exactly. Got if you it. Can get far enough into the forest to turn around and be like, oh shit, yeah. where's the outside?
Yeah.
That's you're in Children of the Forest territory.
Got it.
Also, now that we mentioned it, I didn't think about this either, but like all the shit that the first men got on top of, you know, all the open lands and
the breadbasket.
Yeah, yeah. If the Children of the Forest only got the deep forest and the first men got the outer forest.
So, the thin forest.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a receding hairline
the shallow
of Westeros.
Forest, yeah. But that's even more bullshit we don't want to see you. Children of the Forest, you got to go far enough into the forest to where we can't see you anymore. That's your area. But we get the stuff that we can see on the outskirts.
Yeah. So now you're on my side. Now you're on my side.
You won me over.
Oh, thank you.
I'm pro children.
That's all I wanted to get out of this is to admit that I was right.
Okay, so let's go. We're back to these White Walkers, mm-hmm. right? So they were apparently made by the children of the forest during the wars between them and the first men, and yeah, turned around and came back out of their control. The White Walkers had maybe been dormant for a long time, and these things can reanimate the dead and make themselves a little army of frozen zombies.
Yeah, which is the most terrifying concept of war that I know is the idea of like going to war with someone and the more of them you kill or the more of you they kill, the more their army grows.
It's like true. A lose-lose.
Yeah, unless both sides has the...
Yeah.
Oh, wait, even so, though, if you're winning, you're losing.
Yeah.
That's what you're saying.
Right. Yeah. Winning or losing, you're losing.
Well, it's just, yeah. Cycle of life, man.
Okay.
Okay.
Put that in the art of war.
In Westeros, the long night culminated in what was known as the War for the Dawn. Men and children band together to beat back the White Walkers into the north. Men and children win, but the children are hit heavily. Their general population starts to thin out. That's when,
yeah,
we're like, even if there was,
so it did backfire.
Deep forest everywhere. Well, yeah.
It was sure. it was like a weapon that just really went south. It's like introducing a non-native species into an island, and then just everything goes to shit.
Yeah, if you created that non-native species as a weapon against the natives,
muskrats.
In Essos, there are a few variations of how the Long Night came about and how it came to an end. Okay, we're in Essos. There's Roin, a place with the Roin River stretching through it, and the Roin River froze, and a single hero had to summon the goddess of the river to sing a magical song to bring back the dawn.
Wow.
Are you moved?
I am moved. I am moved.
Good. I'm feeling like dancing.
Yeah. Oh, man. No, just imagine like some kind of 1970s diva coming out and just belting out a song. Like Aretha Franklin just coming out of the river and just...
Bring back the dawn, bring back the dawn. okay, so in Yeti, the Long Night was thought to be a punishment by the gods for the Bloodstone Emperor who murdered his sister, the Amethyst Emperor, to take the throne. Not only did the Bloodstone Emperor murder his sister, but he also began worshipping a mysterious rock that fell from the sky, a rock said to be black and...
greasy.
Possibly greasy.
Yes.
The sun turned...
Wait. Does that mean that all those castles and all those temples and all that stuff is from outer space?
You know, I don't know. It could be. There's lots of kind of like theorizing around what the meaning of this black greasy stone is.
That's very cool, though.
It is very cool. So it's like ancient civilization. It seems to be almost like dinosaurs in the sense that, like, was there a whole era of like creatures that dominated the earth and then left behind these ruins?
Yeah, like, is the theory of evolution valid in Game of Thrones?
That's a pretty big jump.
Oh, I just assumed that the dinosaurs or whatever were hanging around, and then this black greasy goop like extincted, made them extinct.
Oh, I don't think the black greasy stone was like a meteor that wiped everything out. I just mean that like it's almost like fossils, where like evidence of a whole other era.
Oh, so you're thinking just straight up oil. The grease is like fossil fuels.
It's black stone that has a greasy coat to it.
It's not like black oil.
Ectoplasm.
Okay.
So this stuff is kind of sprinkled throughout the mythology and the ancient lore of stuff. And to be fair, I don't even know if this Bloodstone Emperor worshipping stone was necessarily greasy or mentioned in the same breath as the other stuff, but it's a black stone, could be greasy.
Yeah.
Maybe somebody just didn't want to be rude.
Or somebody saw an easy connection and decided to make it.
True. Okay, the sun, so this is back to Yi Ti and their idea of why the Long Night came about. So you got the Bloodstone Emperor who killed his sister to take the throne. And according to their legends, the sun turned away in disgust for a lifetime instead of looking down on this shitty behavior as punishment. And then a woman with a monkey tail saved the day.
Oh.
The Shadowland, Ashai, has a story of a hero called Azor Ahai, who carried a flaming sword named Lightbringer to defeat the darkness and bring back the light.
Oh.
That's kind of cool.
That is very cool.
And then there's also some stories in Westeros also featuring a lone figure known as the Last Hero, who led the Children of Men, Children of the Forest and Men, to victory. So there's
like Jesus.
Yeah, it's sort of like a Jesus thing.
Yeah.
Or
like, I guess Hercules.
Yeah,
more.
Or like John McClane.
John McClane.
Every ancient culture has their John McClane.
Yeah, it's true and Googleable.
Mm-hmm. In Westeros, however the Long Night ended, it definitely ended, okay? And in Westeros, we got Bran the Builder, who commissioned children and giants to make a big-ass wall in the north to keep the White Walkers out.
Okay.
Okay?
Yeah.
And then a guild of enlisted men known as the Night's Watch would swear their lives to manning the wall and keep an eye on things to the north in case the White Walkers tried to come back.
Okay. So the castles all along the wall are very old.
Yeah. These again, predate recorded history.
Damn. Okay.
Yeah. Possibly my favorite tidbit in all of this research is this. In addition to separating the mainlands of Westeros from the White Walkers in the far north, the wall also separated out some people who would be known as wildlings or free folk. The wildlings have a long-standing tiff with people of the Seven Kingdoms of Westeros, especially the neighboring Northmen and the Night's Watch. I thought, for sure, there would be some great backstory of a great rebellion or civil war that led to the free folk slash wildlings seceding from the kingdom or like being banished to the north beyond the wall. But no, when it came down to it, Bran the Builder just didn't survey the land enough.
Oh my God. He just like isolated. He just built the wall and shut these people out.
He didn't give anyone a heads up.
Oh my God.
And there were a bunch of people who happened to be north of the wall when it was built.
Oh shit!
So of course they yeah, develop course a grudge and a you know rivalry with the people who closed them out.
He just cut like them off shut from civilization. A door on them.
Yeah, they're like fuck you. We don't want to be part of your kingdom anyway.
Oh,
okay. One of the last notable occurrences of the Age of Heroes is the story of the Night's King. This is the 13th Lord Commander of the Night's Watch. So it's been a few generations.
Yeah.
This commander fell in love with a woman who turned out to be a White Walker. He came across this woman in the far north, brought her back to the Night Fort at the wall, and decided he was going to start calling himself the Night's King and perform sacrifices. And I'm pretty sure the Night's Queen had the Night's Watchman under like a trance or some sort of like,
like spell. Sex slave magic.
I didn't take it there.
Okay.
The king in the north.
I'm just assuming she was cold. He would have had to been under some kind of trance.
Oh, she was. I mean, she was a White Walker.
That's what I mean.
But I think she put everyone at the castle of the wall. The
Night's Fort. Everyone.
I think she had magic that put everyone under a trance.
Yeah, yeah.
And that like made them okay with making sacrifices.
Yeah.
Because otherwise, why wouldn't the people, the Night's Watch, rebel?
Freak out?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Be like.
What is that?
You brought back
yeah.
a zombie.
Uh-huh.
Do you know you're dating a zombie?
Yeah. We can see clean through her cheekbones.
Okay. So yeah, you got the Night's King and the Night's Queen, making sacrifices and stuff. And, the King in the North at the time built, teamed up with the king beyond the wall, leader of the free folk and the wildlings, probably still pissed about their situation. But the armies of the north came together with the armies of the even more north to defeat the knights couple. And that was the last time that both sides of the wall got along.
Wow.
Take down.
Yeah.
What do you call zombie sex?
Sex between zombies or between a zombie and a non-zombie?
Let's start with zombies and non-zombies.
Zombies and non-zombies. I'd call that...
Not really necrophilia.
No, I'd call it gross.
Okay, grossophilia. Okay, so and then things wrap up here in the pre-recorded history era. In Westeros, the Age of Heroes basically finishes out with a bunch of little wars and development amongst different civilizations and regions of Westeros until the invasion of the Andals. And in Essos, the rise and fall of Valyria.
Of steel fame.
To be continued.
Oh, you son of a bitch. that was really cool.
Yeah, there you have it. That's episode one, including the Dawn Age and the Age of Heroes, pre-recorded history. And in the next episode, we'll get to the invasion of the Andals and the rise and fall of Valyria, where we start seeing some recorded history and a little bit more specificity in dates and the people involved and events. Thoughts? How you feel?
I feel I like it. I like the mythical non-specific aspect of it, because it's like I think that's why I like myth, just regular myth, because it's so open to interpretation and kind of like mapping it into whatever you want it to be. It's got like this weird magical, like cool, makes me feel funny inside kind of feel to it. You know?
I agree. Do you think George R. R. Martin is doing a good job?
I think he's doing a good job. Yeah. I think I'm very nervous for my part of it.
Because you don't want to overshadow.
That's it.
You don't want to kind of trounce this. And
I don't, yeah.
Be like, well, it took him so long to just come up with that, mm-hmm. and I've had less time.
And I came up with something so much better.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's understandable. well, I look forward to hearing about that in our next episode. Two episodes from now, we will pick it back up with the continued history and mythology of A Song of Ice and Fire and Game of Thrones. Any closing thoughts?
I really did not know that men had sex with zombie walkers.
Now you know. Okay. Until next time. Bye.
Bye.